Welcome to another episode of the Bowden Education Podcast with me, Catherine Carden. This is the last in our autumn 2022 series, and I'm delighted today to be welcoming Paula Talman from ShoreMind. We'll also be speaking to Laura from ShoreMind as well towards the end. Bowden Education Podcasts are here to talk to those people that are working within and around education who are making a real positive impact to the landscape, be it directly with students or in the work they do outside and beyond schools, maybe with teachers or indeed to influence policy. So today, as I said, I'm with Paula Talman, and Paula is the Outreach Director at ShoreMind, a charity on a mission to improve mental health awareness. ShoreMind are committed to educating individuals and organisations so they understand mental health and emotional well-being and how to manage them effectively to lead successful, fulfilled lives. Paula founded iSpace Wellbeing, an educational resource which supported over 500,000 children during the pandemic. She's also a registered nurse in both adult and paediatric nursing and has an MSc in nursing science and 25 years of experience in family-centred healthcare. She's a leader in the provision of children's mental health and wellbeing education, former school inspector, safeguarding consultant, mental health first aid instructor, and mindfulness teacher. She's also been twice an Innovation Award winner and was also featured as a Great British Entrepreneur in Forbes 2021. So welcome so much to the podcast today, Paula. I know you've got so much experience. I don't know how we're going to squeeze it all in.
Oh, thank you, Catherine.
So I have really summarised your career, but is there anything that you wanted to add about your career and how you've ended up doing what you do now?
Well, as you said, I'm a qualified nurse, both in adult nursing and paediatric nursing. I took a real interest in paediatric nursing over 25 years ago, just after I had trained actually in my adult nursing. And from that moment when I worked with young children, and in fact, even before then, Catherine, because I volunteered as a 17-year-old in a local hospital where I lived, I had no skills whatsoever in nursing or science or anything. And what I found was that I was so able to make a big difference with people in the hospital setting just by talking to them. And I worked on the children's ward in that volunteering role, and I met children of all from all different backgrounds and with all different types of ailments and with all different types of mental health issues, and especially those children who were in isolation wards, for whether they were cancer patients or whether they were burns patients. They didn't see people very regularly. And it was of the time where your parents couldn't stay overnight with you either. And so I went in and I would talk to these young people, and I would bring music in and I would bring activities in. And through doing that, I really felt that this was the career pathway for me. And I felt that whatever happens, just having the skill and the ability to listen and to talk to people, that is a really powerful thing to be able to do. And so that's what got me started on my career. And then through my career, when I went from adult nursing into paediatrics and focused on paediatrics, I learned so much about mental health and young people and the impact that it had on their lives. And they may have been coming in through the hospital for physical injury or an operation or whatever it might be, but there is physical health and there is mental health. You can't ignore the two. They go hand in hand. And so whether you came in with a mental health issue or physical issue, both are impacted. And so the importance, again, of sitting and talking with people was very evident. And I spent some time working in mental health hospital as well. And when I worked in the mental health hospital with people ranging really from the age of 17 upwards to, you know, late adulthood, like 60s, 70-year-olds. And quite interestingly, they were all in the same unit, despite the age ranges. You know, there wasn't separate areas for different age groups. But what I found during my time there, again, through spending the time to sit and talk with these people, was that many of them who were young in that 20-year-old bracket, a lot of them talked to me about how they felt if they'd known who and how to ask for help, that they would have been able to cope better with the challenges that arose during their lifetime and would have perhaps prevented them from being in the position that they were in that day. And that really resonated with me. It really stuck with me. And when I then moved into accident and emergency, where I spent a lot of my time working with children, again, it was a specialist accident and emergency hospital in London. Every patient that came in the door, I thought about their mental health. So no matter what it was that they came in with, I asked them how they were, how did that make them feel, all of those types of things. And what I found was that for young people with mental health issues, quite often in a triage system of A&E departments, it's not the right place for them for their first point of call, because they need that nurturing, they need that time, they need that empathy, but it's such a busy working environment that the physical, for whatever reason it is, always seems to take the priority, because you know, they need CPR or they need emergency antibiotics or they need this and they need it now. They need an operation and get to theatre quickly. And so that somehow always seems to bump up in front of that mental health issue that someone may come in with. So I did my master's degree on advanced paediatric nurse practitioning, and I focused my research on adolescent mental health and our attitudes towards those young people and how it impacts their care. And following that, I realized that we needed to make a big change in education, because we needed to start at the beginning and we needed to be proactive, not reactive, because we can throw loads of money at the reactive services, which are so important and they're so needed. But if we don't stop the running tap somewhere way down here in the, you know, primary sector, or in training parents from, you know, in the antenatal years about how to start talking to their children and how to start attachment with their children, then we're always going to have those large numbers coming forward into the reactive services and they can't cope. So really, that's how I ended up moving into from the medical sector into the education sector, looking at children in schools and the education that they got, looking at their PSHE curriculum, that personal, social and health education, and trying to see how can we provide an education that actually trains people to look after themselves and then also trains the people around them to look after themselves and to look after each other. Because unless we know how to look after ourselves and to fill our cup first, we can't help the people that we're trying to help. So that's how it came to the creation of the mental health and wellbeing curriculum called iSpace Wellbeing. And that brings you really almost up to the present date, because during the pandemic, that curriculum went out to 500,000 children, went out to over 325 schools, all fully funded from philanthropic investment that I raised. And it's something that I feel very, very proud of, having achieved that. But ShoreMind were there with me along that journey. ShoreMind saw what I was doing and they recognized the importance of what I was doing. And of course, ShoreMind are the charity who went forward and fought for mental health education on the school curriculum back in 2016. So we should all be thankful for that charity for doing that work, and the founder, Adam Shaw, for all of his efforts in making that come to become a reality. Mm. And then after the pandemic, I continued to be very passionate about the work that ShoreMind were doing. And I wanted to join them in their outreach in order to get that good work that they are doing and that training and that education out there into the schools who so desperately need it now. They needed it before the pandemic, but post-pandemic, we need it more than ever. And I'm very proud to be part of that journey.
Yeah. And I think it's amazing. And as you were sat chatting there, I was thinking exactly the what you went, then went on to say. You've been at the sharp end of dealing with it, things when things are not going right. And it absolutely, that's so important. But that the challenge and the pressures on those services is only going to grow if we don't deal with the other end. Yeah. So you've moved and you work now with ShoreMind. Tell us a little bit about ShoreMind and the work that they do on a day-by-day basis.
So the work that we do on a day-by-day basis, we have so many things that we're involved in. And one of the main things that we do is we work with corporates. And we work with corporates to provide them with their training, because mental health in the workplace, again, so important. And I have to think of my children coming through the schools, that what are we preparing them for? We're preparing them for the workplace. So let's start with the workplace. Let's work with corporates and their employees. Let's help them to have really mentally fit environments for their employees to work within. And so we train them. And through that training, the corporates provide the funding for the education program that goes into schools. So we've got a team working on training and training development and liaising with corporates, providing that training and then raising those funds to fund our education program in the schools that I manage. And then so when I pick up the funding, I can go out to the schools, I can talk to the schools, I can talk about their needs, and they're various because every school is different and every child is different and everybody. So the needs are going to be different in terms of the education that they require. So we have, you know, we have a library of training resources for them, and we have a library of guides and leaflets and workbooks that they can choose from. And we can also bespoke training for them as well. And we can also provide assemblies for them. So we can take over the lesson development. We can develop it for them. They can deliver it, or we can deliver it for them, whichever they choose to do. And we can also train their children in being mental health awareness. So we can have courses for the children to do. And we also have a peer mentoring program for the teachers and the children to adapt. And we can help them through that by joining them into a online membership forum once a month, which will be starting in January. So any teacher can pop in, discuss what's going on in their peer mentoring program, ask for tips and strategies, share what's working well, what could be better with the other schools and other teachers that are also delivering this program. And what we'd also like to do is to set up little breathe spaces within schools. So through our volunteering program, we recruit volunteers, we train those volunteers in being able to listen to young people and to be able to signpost them towards support and help. So that's something we can also help the teachers with, because we understand that teachers are, you know, their workload is huge and they very rarely get a break. You know, the times when I work in schools, I still work in a school every week. So I'm very, you know, at the front of it all, understanding what is going on. And they very rarely take a break. And even if they do take a break, they are moving. They are eating, drinking on the move. They are writing, they're correcting, they're talking to a pupil. They're constantly on the go. And so we'd like to come in and support them with some of that workload and to be that first point of call, perhaps for a person very early stages who just wants to talk about something and to have somebody to listen to them and point them in the right direction. So we'd love to do that with them as well. So that's what we do through the education program in schools. But education goes even further than schools, because we would like to have education active. And education active goes out into the community, into the sports clubs and into other clubs that have children. Because teachers aren't just the teachers in schools. Coaches in sports clubs are also teachers. And, you know, club leaders and brownies and club leaders and scouts and all of those people, they are all teachers. And we would like to offer them similar support in what they are doing in their clubs and to provide them with training, or even help the volunteers that they have in those organizations to be trained on the peer mentoring program so that they can use it within their clubs and organizations. organisations as well. So we're also doing that. And then in outreach, we also have our community breathe spaces. So the community breathe spaces are where a volunteer pops up in a cafe and who is available to listen to people and to provide them with resources on signposting and things like that as well. And we're also going to start doing little pop-up talk sessions and little workshops and things like that too. So that if people do feel a little bit unsure about coming forward and meeting someone they don't know and having a conversation about something that can make them feel a little bit vulnerable, then we might be able to start the conversation through offering a talk first. It gets the conversation started and then it all just feels a little bit more familiar. So we're hopefully going to be able to start doing that as well. So you can see ShoreMind is very busy. It's got a lot going on. But every moment is, you know, fully enjoyed because you're always, you know, giving and helping someone. And we know that acts of kindness are so good for our own mental health. So the passion behind this and the passion behind the team at ShoreMind is second to none. It's just phenomenal.
And in it sounds fantastic. And again, as you were chatting, I was thinking, yeah, great idea. Fund your schoolwork through your corporate work. But also, actually, the other thing that ran through my head at that time is, the parents of the children are in these corporate places. I mean, not all, but, you know, these are parents that if we can get parents to have better mental health, family life is better. If they understand mental health, they can support their children at home better. And so it is about catching everybody, isn't it?
Absolutely. I always talk about it like a triangle, Catherine. So you have, you know, that, you know, very strong figure of a triangle, and you've got your children at one point, you've got your parents at another point, and you've got the teachers at the other point. And together, through that structure, you get the best outcomes. So by helping the parents at home, you help the teachers in the schools, you help the child overall, because, you know, in our, you know, childhood years, I think it's over 714 hours is spent in school. And the rest between home and maybe some outside activities. So having that structure is definitely going to really support everybody who is looking after young people. And again, teaching the children how to look after themselves and to look after each other as well. And that's why the peer mentoring program is so important. And another thing I know that we first met about, you know, teachers and teacher training. Because I think it's so important to train the teachers in teacher training, because we've started doing that. We've got a number of teacher training colleges on board with us now, and we are providing the support and the training within that environment, really equipping them for the job at hand when they become fully qualified teachers. And again, that is about that, you know, putting your own oxygen mask on first again, you know, so that when you go out there into the world of teaching, you know what to expect, you know how to manage your own mental health and well-being, and you're then able to help others. And then you'll stay in the job for longer, because if you don't have that initial training and you come straight out into teachers, it can be so overwhelming. So we're supporting teachers in that environment as well.
Great. I think that's brilliant. And I will put in with the podcast notes the links to all of your website and your education program and things, because I'm sure people will want to have a dip in and see what you do. Just that there are so many reports, and we've heard them over years now, highlighting the challenges that young people are facing with their mental health. Year on year, particularly in the UK, we come out as having quite unhappy children, high levels of depression, lots of children on medication. What's your sort of perspective on this in terms of really why?
Yeah.
What are we doing wrong?
Well, children are facing so many challenges today. It is it's a minefield. It's so difficult to navigate the modern world. Even as adults, you know, it's difficult to navigate it. So you can imagine what it must feel like for young people trying to find their way through that while listening to all of these different types of crises around them and how, you know, how am I going to get through all of this and actually move on to university or a successful career and a family of my own while all of these things are going on around me. And we know that there are these challenges and that it's impacting children's mental health because we just have to look at the stats. Mm. And, you know, in 2012, the stats were around 1 in 12 children suffering from a diagnosable mental health condition. And then it moved to 1 in 10, and then it moved to 1 in 8 before the pandemic. And now it's at 1 in 6, you know, so 1 in 6 children, like that's just, it's really hard to imagine that. In fact, I had to try to put the figures together to be able to visualize it because I'm a very visual learner. And the only way that I could visualize this was to look at Wembley Stadium and imagine every seat in Wembley Stadium full of children, but then multiply it by 10 to get the figure of how many children within the UK are actually needing support and help at the moment with their mental health. So you know, this is something that we really have to get on top of at this time. During the pandemic, we saw 80% increase in young people having hospital admissions for eating disorders. We saw an increase in self-harm. We saw an increase in OCD type behaviors. And of course, anxiety just soared. It just went up and up and up. And there was a big study actually done during the pandemic. It was called The Big Ask, where the Commissioner for Children's Health and Wellbeing did a research study on young people and their level of happiness. And what came out from that was that everybody was talking about 80% of children in this country are happy. And I thought, well, that's lovely, but 20% are not. And that's a quarter of our children. And that's a huge, huge number. Mm. And I know the Commissioner for Children's Health and Welfare is doing a huge amount of work out there at the moment to try and support and help. But one person cannot do it on their own. We need everybody getting together to support and help on this. And it is easy to put the blame on lots of different places. It's easy to put the blame on technology. It's easy to put the blame on social media. It's easy to put the blame on the government. But I think, again, that's all reactive stuff. Mm. Social media is here and it's here to stay. And yes, we can fight for more controls and more protective mechanisms. But even when social media and tech companies do these types of things, our children are very clever. They know how to get around various different systems and how to get to where they want to get to. So we need to, again, start at the beginning. We need to be proactive. We need to look at children and talk to them about their values and their habits and their habit building and their character. And who do they want to be? Who are they today? And who do they aspire to be? What will get you there? What values do you need to get you there? So that when you are confronted with peer pressure from your peers, or you're confronted with something on social media, you know what your values are, you know where the boundaries lay around those values, and you don't allow people to challenge them, because you'll protect them because you've been educated in a way that you know that those values are important. So it's about starting with ourselves, really, so that we can protect ourselves from the various different things that might be harmful to our mental health and our overall well-being. So definitely those sort of things that we can do. And this again brings me back to schools and the education that teachers can provide for those young children. And also the connection, because you mentioned about parents and things like that and attachment. And it's about making sure that our parents and our teachers understand attachment theory and the importance of connection, and connection before correction, because we quite often focus on the behavior that's in front of us, but we don't look at what's underneath. And it's connection that will tell us what's underneath the behavior and help us to find helpful strategies for that young person so that they can manage better. So sometimes when I talk to young people, they say, we're talking to them about ask for help. You know, don't be afraid to ask for help, reduce the stigma, all of these types of things. And that's great and that's brilliant, and we must continue to do that. But what the children are asking for is, please recognize me. Please come and ask me, how do I feel today, so that I feel important and recognized in your eyes as my teacher. And I always believe that every one of us has this like little balloon of self-belief inside us. And when a teacher or a parent or a coach or whatever it is who's working with children says something to that young person about, I saw you on that sports pitch, I saw you on that stage, I saw how much effort you put into that piece of work. They may not have got 10 out of 10, it could be 3 out of 10, but that could have been a lot of effort for that child. Mm-hmm. And recognizing that effort and showing them that you notice them inflates that little balloon of self-belief. And the more we do that for young people, the more secure they feel, and the more they will feel able to come forward and feel vulnerable with us and share with us the things that are going on for them. So I definitely think those things are very important to help young people navigate today's world. And I think through the ShoreMind training, we're going to get there. We're definitely going to get there because people will be more aware.
Yeah, and it's confidence, which leads me a bit on to my next question. But beforehand, I was doing a bit of maths in my head, and you were given those stats around mental health, children with mental health challenges, and that is essentially in a standard 30-child class, that's 5 of your children.
Yes.
So, you know, you've got a little group of 5 children that are not doing so well, and I really love that idea of connection before correction. I've just written it down. And there's lots of things that people can look at. I've got a previous colleague of mine, Professor Andrew Peterson, at the Jubilee Centre at the University of Birmingham. He does a lot of work around virtues, character education.
Brilliant.
Linking that, and there are huge links there, and I've spoken to him before around well-being.
Brilliant.
Exploring values and virtues, and you know, lots of people are doing work. So there's that lovely the Brassington brothers, you may have seen them on Twitter. They have written a nice little book, both primary school teachers, around emotionals and sharing your emotions. And so there's lots of lovely work, Adrian Bethune and his well-being stuff. So there's lots of stuff going on. But this kind of leads into my next question. You've kind of alluded to it earlier that we need to get in at the beginning with teachers. But at times, and it may not be early career teachers, it could be really experienced older teachers that are struggling. They lack the confidence to engage really in supporting their children. Maybe they're unsure of how to break the ice with, they're worried about a child perhaps. What would be your advice if they've got concerns or they're not really quite sure how to work in this field?
Yeah, so I think that to start with, accessing resources that can help them in this situation is really, really good. ShoreMind can certainly provide resources and tips on how they can approach young people. The iSpace curriculum that I created can also do that. And I think it's about, rather, because when we use the word mental health, everybody automatically thinks about mental illness. Mm-hmm. And so then they begin to get fearful of it and afraid to talk about it because they feel, well, I'm not a trained, you know, psychiatrist, or I'm not a trained psychologist or a counselor. I could do something wrong. And actually, if we turn it on its head and we try to think about it in terms of building mental fitness in young people and helping them to become guardians of their own well-being. And in doing that, we're just talking to them about emotions. You know, all of our emotions, we all have them. They're a communication skill, and they tell people something about us, and giving them words to describe those feelings. It doesn't mean that you have to provide the solution to those feelings or wave a magic wand and take them away, because it's important to remember that all emotions are good emotions because they're a communication skill. There are none of them that are bad emotions. And we mustn't try to suppress them and hide them and put them away so that it makes us all feel more comfortable. We should be encouraging them to express them. And I use the words express, don't suppress, because when we suppress our emotions, they stay within in us and they impact our nervous system and they come out in all of our behaviors. And I also describe it sometimes as, imagine you have a football, and by suppressing that football, you push it onto that water and you try to hold it there for as long as you can. But eventually that ball will pop up and hit you in the face somewhere. And sometimes it can hit you in the face unexpectedly and you don't know why. And that's what happens when we try to suppress our emotions. And so by asking someone, how are you today? How are you feeling? What's going on in your world? How are your relationships with your friends? How are you feeling about your academics? How are you feeling about that match later on? And just allowing them the space to be able to express whatever it is that's going on for them. And also thinking about their thoughts, because it's not just about emotions, it's about the way we think as well. And so they might say something like, I'm really nervous about the match. I don't think I should go. I think I've got a tummy ache. And they might then want to try and avoid going. But by helping them to talk about it, you can get into their thoughts as well, because that's the self-doubt. They're telling themselves, I'm no good at this. I'm not good enough. People are going to say that I've missed, or I could have done better. I didn't do enough. So you're able to help them sort those thoughts out themselves as well. So you're really engaging with them to allow them to problem solve in a supportive environment. You're not doing anything that's going to cause them to do anything harmful to themselves. In fact, you're actually helping prevent something like that happening, because they know they have someone to talk to. And we know that having someone to talk to is one of the best and probably the first things you should do in terms of looking after your mental health and well-being.
Definitely, definitely. But going back to what we spoke about earlier, A, knowing what to say, but having the capacity within yourself as a teacher and those working with children to engage with the children is about your own well-being. And if you're tired, if you're stressed, if you're not feeling so well, you will find it far harder to engage with children in about those caring, that connection. That will start to deteriorate. You may notice it in yourself as a teacher. You might realize that you've become a bit disengaged and disconnected and focusing on delivery and content and getting the job done, just getting through the day. And I would hazard a guess that there are several teachers out there that might listen to this and say, yeah, that's me. I just get through the day. I get through the week. And I have disengaged a little bit how I once was. And quite often teachers frame it, don't they, as we used to have so much more time.
Yes.
And that may be true, it may be accurate, it may be facts, but actually what's most important with children and the way that they learn, children can only learn at their best when they're feeling happiest.
Yes.
And it is connection and therefore care in our role as a teacher is so important, but you do only have the reserves to do it if you are feeling well yourself. So there is a connection. And absolutely, if you notice that disengagement with your children, do some self-reflection about how are you? Do you need to just realign yourself?
Absolutely. I totally agree. And post-pandemic, we find that a lot of people within our roles, whether it be in the healthcare profession or in the teaching profession or in the police force, that we have the risk of becoming being affected by compassion fatigue. Because we give and we give and we give and we give, and then we become fatigued out through doing that. And absolutely, teacher time, it just keeps getting filled with all these different things. And I do remember that there was a report that came out that was saying and advising teachers that, you know, if you look at your workload and you think that does not impact a child's learning, then remove it.
Why are you doing it?
Why are you doing it? Remove it. And you have to be really disciplined with yourself to do that. And I teach teachers about a mental hygiene routine and how to develop a mental hygiene routine and how to protect yourself and make sure that your day has things in it for you. And that it absolutely includes self-compassion. So that talking to yourself like a best friend would. Now, mindfulness. Now, some people, you know, embrace mindfulness. Some people are not so sure about it. Some people don't understand it. But actually, mindfulness, coming off autopilot, just bringing yourself into the present moment, sitting with your thoughts, your feelings, letting them pass by without judgment, and just taking notice of what is around you. Like I during the pandemic, I was working from home. My daughter was doing online learning from home, but we have a back door out the back of our house and we have a side door into our house and a front door. But I said, everybody has to go to work and go to school. So every morning after breakfast, we go out the back door. We do a loop around the garden and we come in the side door and then go to our workstations. And in doing that, you felt, I felt the air on my skin. I noticed it's a blue sky today. I noticed it was raining. I noticed it was cold. Those micro moments of just doing something off autopilot can be really actually good for your whole nervous system and for your well-being. Getting outside in nature, we know, is really, really important. And I know that teachers quite often end up in the school building all day long, and getting yourself out, just walking around that building, is so important. So mindfulness really helps you to do that. And it also introduces some breathing techniques as well. And when we do some deep breathing techniques, and it can just be as simple as, five deep breaths, it stimulates a nerve that goes from your brain to all of your organs in your body, and it calms the nervous system down. And it really does help you to have a better day. And I also spoke to somebody once about teachers and the fast pace of everything. And they said, that when you're going from class to class, imagine you're a golfer and you're walking up to take your next shot off the tee. You do it slowly and you take the breath. You think you just ground yourself and you walk into the classroom and you feel prepared for the next lesson. And then the last thing in self-compassion, like there's lots of research on self-compassion and these three elements are in it. So it's the talk to yourself like a best friend would, the mindfulness. And then finally, it's the common humanity. You are not alone. Please reach out to your colleagues. Please reach out to other family members. You're not alone. Everybody feels this weight on them with what's going on in the world around us. So share it and unload.
The three great things. And also, I was listening to a podcast recently about Calm, which is a meditation app.
Yes.
And I believe it's free. This app said it's free to all teachers across the world.
Well, that's wonderful.
If you're interested, and I know some people are, like you say, with mindfulness and meditation, I think it has a sort of, people have a view, and I would always say just try something, because it's not necessarily what you think it is, and you make it what you want to do. And another thing we did really well in lockdown is when we weren't allowed out, and we were only allowed out for that one walk a day, everyone took it.
Yes. Because
we weren't allowed out, so we went. And in lots of people are saying it's completely changed their way and they felt much better. And it's something that they wanted to keep after lockdown. And we did lots of talking with people that I work with about what we'd like to keep, what we need to go back to. You know, let's not just flip back. But we flipped back.
Yes.
And people are not going out. So I really encourage people to just imagine you are only allowed out that once.
Yes.
Please, in your lunch break at school, even if it's a walk around the block.
Yes.
It doesn't need to be long. Go out. Because we do, like you say, teachers are running around. We're all busy and we eat at our desk and so on. In France, you're not allowed to eat at your desk. There's legislation against it. You know, take a break, because actually research shows that in the afternoon, you're less productive if you haven't, and you're much more productive if you have. So let's pretend we can only go out for that one time and make it, because we all made a point of it. And that's kind of disappeared, which is really sad.
Yeah, making it part of your routine is so important, because during the pandemic, people who fared best were people who had a routine. And the research came out about people who had a dog. And because people who have a dog have to take them out to go for a walk. And because they had the connection with the dog, but they also got outside in nature, and they also did some physical exercise, which we know helps your mental health. And because they had that routine, they do better. And they still have the dog and they still do the routine. So they're continuing to look after their mental health and well-being. So I'm not recommending that everybody gets a dog, but it's about the routine. Yes. Put something in, ring fence it, because that's for you. And we have to start with ourselves if we're going to be able to be productive and also be helpful to others.
So, Paula, you've talked a lot about the range of courses that SureMind offer. How can people go on to find out about these?
So you can go to our website, which is suremind.org. And everything is there in terms of the education. If you go to the education page, you will see, scroll down to the bottom, you'll see a flyer there for education, and you'll see lots of little free guides and leaflets there as well. There's one there on attachment, so a little quick introduction to attachment theory there for people if they want to learn a little bit about that. There's also a mental health and well-being strategy guide there as well to help teachers with their schools in terms of looking at what do we need and to be a mentally healthy school. And also there's a little activity booklet there for primary school age children to help you have that conversation and to start helping them to explore their thoughts and their feelings as well. So lots of little bits in there for you. And then thinking about yourself as a teacher, when you go to that website, at the top under resources, you'll see guides. Click on guides and you will have everything there to inform you about stress and burnout and things like that that can support and help you as well. And of course, there is our volunteers click button there as well. If you're interested in joining a SureMind and being trained as a volunteer and helping us in our Breathe Cafes or with fundraising or various different things, then do get in touch with us as well, because we're always welcoming in new people to come and support us on the mission.
Great. So do go to suremind.org, and I'll put that again in the podcast notes. So I'm going to invite Laura in now, because Laura has a really challenging job in overseeing fundraising. Fundraising's not an easy job, but welcome, Laura. Tell us a little bit about what your role is in SureMind and how people can get involved and support as well.
I mean, I feel like I must say Paula has just done a fantastic job at kind of digging into everything that we do, first of all. So testament to Paula there, because she's made this part of the interview quite easy for me. So I'm the director of fundraising for SureMind, and essentially it is what it says on the tin. It's about finding sources of income that we can use to sustain the charity short term and long term, but also so that we can continue to provide that element of training. So as Paula kind of alluded to, everything that we raise as a charity goes straight back into our community, goes straight back into the people we work with, straight back into the schools that we support. So that comes in various ways. I think we've still got this image of cake and bake sales, which are always good, they're always a winner. But sort of a completely different range of things. So if it's working with corporates, it can be anything from events within the corporates, charity of the year, and providing the training for them. So again, being their training provider, because when they pay us as a charity instead of a private organisation, like I said, the money goes straight back into our communities. So whether they sponsor an event, all of those kind of things, then obviously building on that, establishing connections within that organisation, so that then pulls out, exactly like Paula alluded to, into their families and different things. They then come to events and different things like that. Also wills and legacies. So we do a lot of work with our will writers, where people can make a will with us and people can leave us a legacy in their will, which obviously, again, establishes that longevity for our charity, knowing that we've got kind of that income coming in for years to come. And then from a public facing point of view, it is the traditional fundraising, all the fun stuff that people love getting involved with, whether it's third party events and we've got someone jumping out of an aeroplane or riding. And we had a story earlier of somebody who a few years ago rode from the UK to Switzerland, I think, for us. So whether it's things like that or whether it's getting involved with volunteer days, again, putting us in touch with where you work and passing our details on to the school. So it there's lots of different ways to get involved with us, but ultimately everything we do, as with every charity, has that kind of income generation at its forefront. And I think for us it's about building on the brand we've already got and the achievements we've already made, but also understanding, helping our public to understand the importance of giving to a small charity so they know where that pound to penny ratio goes. So a lot of our pound goes back into our schools and our communities rather than going on big brand awareness campaigns or big marketing, and ultimately that means that we can help more people. So yeah, it covers a broad range of things. It's definitely a challenge post COVID. I think fundraising has changed a lot over the last 2 years, but it's still something we're really excited about. And I think the more people that hear what we do and they hear the level that we do it at, people are becoming more aware of us now and actually seeing the value in kind of the complexity of what we can offer.
Definitely. So if you've got teachers here, they might be interested in looking at volunteering themselves if they've got time, but also thinking about their school and their charity and who their charities are for this year. So I know schools, you know, rotate charities and so on.
Yeah, and schools are brilliant for fundraising because they can have so much fun with it. It gives the kids something to do. It gives kind of a good focus. And I think the really good thing is when a school works with us in a fundraising capacity, there is that kind of collaborative working because they're not just giving to us. This is one thing I'm really, really big about in terms of fundraising. We are part of the communities that we're in, and it's important that we give back to people as much as they're giving to us. So when we work with a school or when we work with an organisation, I look at how can we help them just as much as how they can help us. And it's the same with the school. We want to be there for the teachers and there for the pupils as much as they are for us. So the whole process of fundraising becomes a fun, engaging activity, but also one that they can benefit from, one where they can take those tools or they can take the things we're doing and they can implement them. So one of the things we're really kind of passionate about is making sure that the fundraising activities within schools do have that mental health element to them. So there is an incentive for schools to pick us as a charity, because it's not just a traditional kind of, you know, reindeer run or things like that. We're actually building in our mission and what we're doing, so they're kind of getting both elements to it while supporting us.
Yeah, brilliant. And I'll get your email if you're happy, or your generic email about fundraising, and put that into the notes as well, so that if anyone's interested or wants to find out more, they can drop you a line. I'm
fundraising,
sure,
fundraising or training, like I said, if it's a company and they want, you know, their mental health training, or if they work for a company that they know, or you know, they're looking for a new training provider, or individuals that want to look at courses, anything like that, they can speak to me about.
Brilliant. Thank you so much, Laura.
No, thank you.
And hopefully people will say, oh, that's a great idea. It's a charity I've never thought of before. So, and get in touch. So thank you so much. So Paula, just to round up our chat, and it's been, I mean, really full chat around so much, and you've achieved so much yourself, but what would you say has been your greatest achievement? It's a really hard question. I couldn't answer this.
It's a very good question. And it really does get you thinking about, you know, all the things that that I've done. And because I grew up in the 80s, so I have a lot of years to look back on and see what my greatest achievement was. And you know what? You automatically go to the kind of, I won this award, or I won that award, or that. But actually, that's not the big things. That's actually not the big achievements. I think I've been very lucky to have a very rewarding career in the care that I provide for other people. So, you know, I have brought life into the world. I've delivered babies. I've saved lives in A&E through bringing people back from death. And I've also saved lives from actually talking to people and asking them, how are you today? So I think they're my greatest achievements. Yeah. Life, enabling people to have life and to be able to help them and navigate them and support them through that life. And to be able to say that you saved a life through asking them, how are you today? That's the biggest achievement.
Yeah, and that is a great achievement as well. And is there an ambition you still hope to achieve?
I helped 500,000 children during the pandemic. And I would really like to, you know, I wouldn't really like to put a number on it, but I want to help as many people as possible. You know, if I could see the numbers in the stats go backwards, if I could see that 1 in 6 going backwards,
yeah,
that would be the best achievement I could have.
Brilliant. So you can find out more about SureMind's work, as we said, at SureMind.org, and of course follow them on Twitter at SureMind_. But I'll put all of this in, and do drop them a line. There's loads of free resources that I know will help you, but also help the children with whom you work. So thank you so much, Paula. It's been an absolute pleasure this evening to chat to you. And
oh, thank you, Catherine. And also our social media, please do follow us on our social media, our Instagram, our LinkedIn, our Twitter accounts. Please do follow us there, and
I'll put them all
see
in.
All the wonderful things we're doing.
Brilliant. Lovely. Thank you.